Random House Audio presents Sweetland Stories by E.L. Doctorow. Read for you by John Rubinstein with Joshua Swanson.
A House on the Plains. Mama said I was thenceforth to be her nephew and to call her Aunt Dora. She said our fortune depended on her not having a son as old as 18 who looked more like 20. "Say Aunt Dora," she said. I said it. She was not satisfied. She made me say it several times. She said I must say it, believing she had taken me in since the death of her widowed brother Horace. I said, "I didn't know you had a brother named Horace." "Of course I don't," she said with an amused glance at me. "But it must be a good story if I could fool his son with it." I was not offended as I watched her primp in the mirror, touching her hair as women do, although you can never see what afterward is different. With the life insurance, she had bought us a farm 50 miles west of the city line. Who would be there to care if I was her flesh-and-blood son or not? But she had her plans and was looking ahead. I had no plans. I had never had plans, just the inkling of something, sometimes. I didn't know what. I hunched over and went down the stairs with the second trunk wrapped to my back with a rope. Outside, at the foot of the stoop, the children were waiting with their scraped knees and socks around their ankles. They sang their own dirty words to a nursery rhyme. I shooed them away and they scattered off for a minute, hooting and hollering, and then, of course, came back again as I went up the stairs for the rest of the things. Mama was standing at the empty bay window. "While there is your court of inquest on the one hand," she said, "on the other is your court of neighbors. Out in the country," she said, "there will be no one to jump to conclusions. You can leave the door open and the window shades up. Everything is clean and pure under the sun." Well, I could understand that, but Chicago, to my mind, was the only place to be, with its grand hotels and its restaurants and paved avenues of trees and mansions. Of course, not all Chicago was like that. Our third-floor windows didn't look out on much besides the row of boarding houses across the street. And it is true that in the summer people of refinement could be overcome with the smell of the stockyards, although it didn't bother me. Winter was another complaint that wasn't mine. I never minded the cold. The wind in winter blowing off the lake went whipping the ladies' skirts like a demon dancing around their ankles. And winter or summer, you could always ride the electric streetcars if you had nothing else to do. I above all liked the city because it was filled with people all a-bustle, and the clatter of hooves and carriages, and with livery wagons and drays and the peddlers and the boom and clank of the freight trains. And when those black clouds came sailing in from the west, pouring thunderstorms upon us so that you couldn't hear the cries or curses of humankind, I liked that best of all. Chicago could stand up under the worst God had to offer. I understood why it was built. A place for trade, of course, with railroads and ships and so on, but mostly to give all of us a magnitude of defiance that is not provided by one house on the plains. And the plains is where those storms come from. Besides, I would miss my friend Winifred Chervinska, who stood now on her landing as I was going downstairs with the suitcases. "Come in a minute," she said. "I want to give you something." I went in, and she closed the door behind me. "You can put those down," she said of the suitcases. My heart always beat faster in Winifred's presence. I could feel it, and she knew it too, and it made her happy. She put her hand on my chest now, and she stood on tiptoes to kiss me with her hand under my shirt, feeling my heart pump. "Look at him, all turned out in a coat and tie. Oh," she said, with her eyes tearing up, "what am I going to do without my Earl?" But she was smiling. Winifred was not a mama type of woman. She was a slight, skinny thing, and when she went down the stairs, it was like a bird hopping. She wore no powder or perfumery, except by accident the confectionery sugar which she brought home on her from the bakery, where she worked behind the counter. She had sweet, cool lips, but one eyelid didn't come up all the way over the blue, which made her not as pretty as she might otherwise be. And of course, she had no titties to speak of. "You can write me a letter or two, and I will write back," I said. "What will you say in your letter?" "I will think of something," I said. She pulled me into the kitchen, where she spread her feet and put her forearms flat on a chair so that I could raise her frock and fuck into her in the way she preferred. It didn't take that long, but even so, while Winifred wiggled and made her little cat sounds, I could hear Mama calling from upstairs as to where I had gotten. We had ordered a carriage to take us and the luggage at the same time rather than sending it off by the less expensive railway express and taking a horse car to the station. That was not my idea, but exactly the amounts that were left after Mama bought the house only she knew. She came down the steps under her broad-brim hat and widow's veil and held her skirts at her shoe tops as the driver helped her into the carriage. We were making a grand exit in full daylight. This was pure Mama as she lifted her veil and glanced with contempt at the neighbors looking out from their windows. As for the nasty children, they had gone quite quiet at our display of elegance. I swung up beside her and closed the door, and at her instruction threw a handful of pennies on the sidewalk, and I watched the children push and shove one another and dive to their knees as we drove off. When we had turned the corner, Mama opened the hat box I had put on the seat. She removed her black hat and replaced it with a blue number trimmed in fake flowers. Over her morning dress, she draped a glittery shawl in striped colors like the rainbow. "There," she said. "I feel so much better now. Are you all right, Earl?" "Yes, Mama," I said. "Aunt Dora." "Yes, Aunt Dora." "I wish you had a better mind, Earl. You could have paid more attention to the doctor when he was alive. We had our disagreements, but he was smart for a man." The train stop of LaVille was a concrete platform and a lean-to for a waiting room and no ticket agent window. When you got off, you were looking down an alley to a glimpse of their main street. Main Street had a feed store, a post office, a white wooden church, a granite stone bank, a haberdasher, a town square with a four-story hotel, and in the middle of the square on the grass the statue of a Union soldier. It could all be counted because there was just one of everything. A man with a dray was willing to take us. He drove past a few other streets where first there were some homes of substance and another church or two, but then, as you moved further out from the town center, worn-looking one-story shingle houses with dark little porches and garden plots, and clotheslines out back with only alleys separating them. I couldn't see how, but Mama said there was a population of over 3,000 living here. And then, after a couple of miles through farmland, with a silo here and there off a straight road leading due west through fields of corn, there swung into view what I had not expected. A three-story house of red brick with a flat roof and stone steps up to the front door like something just lifted out of a street of row houses in Chicago. I couldn't believe anyone had built such a thing for a farmhouse. The sun flared in the window panes, and I had to shade my eyes to make sure I was seeing what I saw. But that was it, in truth, our new home. Not that I had the time to reflect, not with Mama settling in. We went to work. The house was cobwebbed and dusty, and it was rank with the droppings of animal life. Blackbirds were roosting in the top floor, where I was to live. Much needed to be done, but before long she had it all organized and a parade of wagons was coming from town with the furniture she'd expressed, and no shortage of men willing to hire on for a day with hopes for more from this grand, good-looking lady with the rings on several fingers. And so the fence went up for the chicken yard, and the weed fields beyond were being plowed under, and the watering hole for stock was dredged, and a new privy was dug. And I thought for some days Mama was the biggest employer of LaVille, Illinois. But who would haul the well water and wash the clothes?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?